woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Wild Michigan, I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State via the Wild Michigan Talk Network, all over the world via podcast at our website, wildmichiganradio.com, being brought to you in part by Not Just Guns of Mason. Look for their Wednesday night auctions, and if you've been looking for a suppressor for your firearm, be it your handgun, your shotgun, your good coyote hunting rifle, your AR-15 or whatever it is that you're looking for, start the process now. They have them at Not Just Guns, but there is some paperwork. It takes some time to get a suppressor for your firearm, but 100% legal and available at notjustguns.com. Make sure you check them on online or in person, Cedar Street at 127 Mason. Great guys. I love Mike over there, and they've got lots. They've just got a huge selection of all kinds of firearms, new and pre-owned, plus ammunition and accessories, so make sure to check them out. Also being brought to you by our friends at Conquest Sense of Davison, Michigan. Look them up online or right in our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Makers of VS1, also Evercalm, Sense and a Stick, and so many other great products. And we're going to talk with Doug Roberts right now from Conquest Sense. But this is not going to be our typical talk. We are going to clear up some misinformation and pull some things to the forefront. Maybe a little off-season, something that I feel needs to be talked about. There is a lot of pro-con, no, I'm going to say pro-con, let me rephrase that, plus-minus for the deer farming industry in Michigan and abroad. A lot of people love the big deer that come out of these facilities, and people, you know, kind of turn their nose up at it, or maybe they just don't understand what these facilities are for, who is benefiting from them, and why they are actually important to what we do. So we are going to talk about that right now with Doug Roberts, who's currently in Phoenix, Arizona. But we are going to talk about the United Deer Farmers of Michigan with you right now. Good morning, Doug, and thanks for being up early with us today.
Good morning, Duran. It's good to be back on with you.
So let's get this straight.
It is a little early here, though.
But it's a lot warmer, Doug, so it's kind of a balance. You don't have the snow we're getting.
Yeah, it's a lot warmer here than it is back home, I hear. So.
Yeah, we've got lots of snow coming down here on the day we record. But I want to talk about, you've been a deer farmer. You've been raising whitetails, typical trophy class whitetails, for quite some time at your farm there in Davison. You have created products from the byproducts of these deer, and you have made some fascinating discoveries over the course of the years as well. But I want to really put to the forefront what goes on in these deer farms, because all people see is they see either big racks, freakish racks, and high fences. And to a lot of hunters, that doesn't equal anything good, when I know so much more than that.
Well, absolutely. If you look just from that viewpoint from the outside, the industry doesn't have a very good look. And I think we need to go back to the beginning and actually, you know, most people don't understand, where did deer farming start? How did it start? And ironically, it started many, many years ago when Michigan had very few whitetails. The DNR actually went to the farmers, the beef and dairy farmers, and asked them, if we give you some deer, would you start raising these and multiplying these so we can rebuild the deer herd in Michigan? So ironically, the DNR agency, many years ago, and we did a TV episode on Conquest 200 about this, so you can literally look up the facts. Deer farming in Michigan actually was started by the Department of Natural Resources. What they didn't realize is once we got the deer kind of moving in the right direction and repopulated, a lot of these farmers really, truly enjoyed raising these animals and continued to do so and were allowed to do so. Currently, our industry in Michigan is dual regulated. The DNR handles the permitting issue. So they make sure that the property is the right type of property, is under the right conditions. They also handle the perimeter fence. In other words, that fence that keeps wild animals out and our animals in, they maintain that. Then from a disease issue, in a herd issue, internal issue, is the Department of Agriculture. Because we're considered livestock in the state of Michigan at this point, because they're privately owned. Many years ago, as I said, we got our start, the white-tailed deer that we got, came from the wild out of Michigan. Now, with that being said, a lot of people still think we get wild deer, and we change our genetics with that, and we're stealing deer. Many years ago, we went to the legislature and the Department of Ag and DNR and asked them to stop, put into law that no longer can anyone ever buy a live deer from the state of Michigan under any situation. And so that was changed. But so it's most people don't understand, one, that's how deer farming started in most states, but in Michigan, absolutely. Two, we were our own enemy. We lost control of respect for the white-tailed deer in a lot of ways. You know, the white-tailed deer is the most emotionally charged hunted animal on the face of this earth because it's loved by everybody, hunter or non-hunter. Everyone loves to see these animals, to watch them because of their beauty and their grace. But with that also is the ability to look at a deer and go, that's a white-tailed deer. And our industry really started creating a lot of large, what we call non-typical-looking deer. A Frankenstein deer, you know, Christmas tree deer. There's many names for that. Our industry lost focus on the reverence for a white-tailed deer and what it should look like, and how we should handle that, because we were going for the score. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of hunters that were going for just, I want the biggest score. I want the biggest score. And lost sight of, man, it should still look like a white-tailed deer. And so that's created a lot of animosity between hunters, our industry. Within our industry, we have this argument. And thankfully, the deer industry is now going back to wanting what looks like a typical white-tailed deer because we've realized we've damaged that that majesty of what a white-tailed deer should look like.
Doug Roberts is our guest here on Wild Michigan Conquest Sense. United Deer Farmers of Michigan is what we're talking about right now, quickly. Doug, you have deer, you have monster, typical white-tailed deer on your farm. In Davison, you have Kaiser, you have just incredible deer. What are, you know, for, so everybody knows, what are you using those deer for? I mean, you have these beautiful genetics in these typical whitetails, but there's got to be some money involved that you're making to keep this going, because aside from Conquest Sense in general, this is an expensive business to be running.
It's a very expensive. Farming is a very expensive business, and this is just farming white-tailed deer or cervidae. But you're right. We try to use, or like any farmer, capitalize on every aspect of the deer. So we sell our bucks to private ranches for people to go in and hunt and hopefully harvest one of these animals, but enjoy the outdoors in a controlled setting. And even that structure is a whole other topic that we need to talk about. But the ranchings have really changed over the years in how they're handling the herds and the management of the wildlife and the habitat inside. But our farm does a number of things. We try to genetically raise the cleanest, nicest looking typical white-tailed deer, and with that comes bigger scores. Secondly, we collect all of the scents and smells from those deer, and that's what creates all of the scent products such as Evercalm, VS1, Rutting Buck, and those things. But we also have a food, venison snack sticks that we sell. So many things, every part gets sold.
All right, hang on, Doug. More coming your way. Going to find out more about this mythical thing called deer farming on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
is Nick Munch of Michael Waddell's Phone Collector, and you're listening to my main man, Duran Martinez, on Wild Michigan.
Rifle in a gun rack, hanging in the back glass, book knife on my belt, ain't no lamp for sale.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, being brought to you by Conquest Sense and Not Just Guns. Two great Michigan companies sponsoring this show. Find them all at our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Like, you can pick up the podcast there as well. Speaking with Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense, but now speaking about the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. And Doug, we've touched on this way back in the beginning. When I first met you, when you were working with a place called Paradise Hunt Club up north, this is, if I remember correctly, 1,100 acres of, yes, let's call this what everybody wants to call it, a high fence facility. But when you have that much coverage, okay, how many here in Michigan can say they hunt 1,100 acres of private land with or without a fence? Okay, that's a lot of ground to cover.
It is. And Duran, the ranch side, the hunting side of our industry is where most people get frustrated, because our industry many years ago when we started really messed up. And we need to own that we created what people call canned hunting. We did not realize that by overpopulating the number of deer on a piece of property, and you're right, Paradise Hunt Club was approximately 1,000 continuous acres, we were putting way too many deer in there per acre. And so when a hunter would come in, it wasn't a matter if he was going to see a potential buck to shoot. It was more of, well, which one do you want to shoot? Because there's 20 of them standing in front of you. And that was not realistic hunting equal to what you would have on outside the fence, outside those ranches. And so we created that problem ourselves. We need to take the blame for that. But over the last 15, 20 years, realizing we had made that mistake, we have readjusted these hunting ranches to where it is a very well-balanced deer herd in balance with the habitat that is inside these ranches. In other words, there's no guarantee on getting a deer. You're going to have to come and hunt. There's the possibility of going home without one. There's a possibility of seeing a lot of great young bucks, but maybe not the mature bucks during the rut. So we've really started to concentrate on mimicking the hunting structure in the wild to make it the same inside as it is outside. The difference is when you do see something that's mature, it's just going to have a lot more antler, bigger antler on its head. That's why we call it a trophy. Our quality of antler structure is much bigger and more aggressive than what you'll find in the wild in most areas in this country.
You know, speaking with Doug Roberts here from Conquest Sense, speaking on the United Deer Farmers of Michigan and where that is today, Doug, I think the biggest argument that sticks in me more than anything else, and, you know, I'll catch heat for this, frankly, I don't care, is when somebody defines themselves as a meat hunter or someone that defines themselves as a trophy hunter, I think those prefixes both should be thrown out the window. We are hunters in general, okay? Whatever it is you choose to hunt, that's fine, but defining yourself really narrows things down and creates labels.
Duran, you're exactly right. And we as hunters, our hunting community is decreasing every year. There's fewer and fewer hunters. And we at some point need to stop. I have my special way that I prefer to hunt. You have your special way. Neither one of them is wrong. It doesn't matter if you're a bow hunter, a crossbow hunter, a muzzleloader hunter, a rifle hunter. We're still all hunters. It doesn't matter to me where you hunt. We better all realize that wherever we hunt or however we hunt, if we do not start agreeing and accepting each other's differences and getting new people in whatever form, shape, or way, or whatever place that they want to hunt, whether it's 10 acres up north, 40 acres down in farm fields down southern Michigan, or behind a fence called a private ranch, we're still all hunters. because we're dwindling. And if we dwindle enough, the non-hunting community potentially can put us out of business, can potentially take it away. We're the managers of all of the animals, inside and outside the fence. And we need to start looking at that as a whole group and not as parts of groups within the large group. We're our biggest enemy. Hunters themselves just tear each other apart because we're not accepting of each other's ways of hunting, and it's hurting all of us.
Well, and that's it. Doug Roberts is our guest here on Wild Michigan. When we define ourselves as duck hunters, you know, turkey hunters or whatever, you're putting together these small subgroups that can be attacked in many different ways and dispersed by special interest groups, that their main focus, these large groups' focus, is just to end all hunting, to end all gun ownership and the like. So the minute we quit, and I've been having this argument for 15 years on this show, that, you know, the minute we start coming together as just a single unit, the better off we are going to be. But at the same time, you know, it's difficult. But I'm going to leave that part behind real quickly. I want to touch on something. I don't want to drag this out too much longer, but I want to point out that when we first started this show, when CWD first came into point here in Michigan, over in Kent County, it was found on a private facility. And that owner at the time was caught trying to sneak deer out of the facility after he had already been caught. And you know, and this is not the case with every facility.
It's not. And that's the thing. Our industry, our association, UDFOM, was very adamantly upset about that. And thankfully, we have a very good working relationship right now with the Department of Natural Resources, with the Department of Agriculture. The three of us get together, and if we find there's a problem or there's some concern from one group, we all sit down together and try to figure that out. As CWD has really become the major problem for all of us, the DNR agency needs to handle that disease in a way, from a wildlife standpoint, a wildlife management standpoint. They have a big job to do, and we're here to help them in any way we can. But at the same time, we're looking at it, our industry, from the agriculture side, looking at it as an animal disease. And so we're having the Department of Ag look and start to do some of these research things, trying to eliminate and stop CWD. Not only inside the fence, but outside the fence. It benefits all hunters. It benefits all wildlife. All of us, again, we're all working together in our own areas to try to stop CWD. None of us want it to spread. I mean, you look at my farm. Every month when I turn heads in, Duran, I have to sit, my wife and I, Karen and I, sit and look at all of our staff and go, are we going to have to tell them they no longer have a job because one head showed up positive?
Right.
I mean, it would eliminate conquest sense. There'd be no Evercom. There'd be no VS1. It's done. With one sample, we're out of business.
Mm-hmm.
And every month we have to sit there and wonder for a week to 2 weeks of, is this the one or isn't the one? And by the grace of God, it hasn't happened, and we really pray and believe that He will protect us from it. But it is something that we always have to look with inside and outside the fence, and we have to work together.
Absolutely. Doug Roberts, Conquest Sense, joining us here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes States. On the Wild Michigan Talk Network, all over the world, at wildmichiganradio.com. You can contact me directly if you'd like via my email, outdoormailbag@gmail.com. My cell phone's listed on there as well. And I know we've got some people listening down on at the Ford plant working the line that listen to the podcast that are absolutely free. No commercials, none of that stuff, because our friends like Conquest Sense and Not Just Guns are the ones sponsoring the show. They're helping bring that all that to you absolutely free, gratis, if you will. But we're going to speak now with our good friend Bill Parker, editor of Michigan Outdoor News, and he's working with Showspan as well. We've got Outdoorama coming up to the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. That's actually a name I've been able to wrap my tongue around over the past few years since it has become new. But the show, again, Bill, here we are, man. We're up to that time. February has not disappointed with weather.
No, I think we kind of got a break in January, and then February rolled in and said, okay, it's payback time.
It's winter now. We're going to be winter, and we're going to make things difficult if you want to go anywhere. But, you know, it's been tough. But this is like, you know, we've had the Ultimate Fishing Show Detroit at the Suburban Collection Showplace. That is our first of the Cabin Fever series, as I like to call it. But now is Outdoorama, a little less fishing, a little more of the hunting and outdoor lifestyle, but still a tradition here in mid-Michigan.
Yeah, it sure is. It's actually one of the oldest shows. This is the 47th year, believe it or not, for Outdoorama. It started back in 1973 at the old state fairgrounds on 8 Mile Road. Some of the old-timers will probably remember heading to that. but, yeah, it's been around for a long time, got a great tradition and a great following of conservation and natural resources and just general outdoor fun here in southern Michigan.
Now, the stage and the seminar speakers have not disappointed, and we're actually seeing, like, second-generation people coming in here with Mark and Jake Romanak.
Yeah, right, exactly. We sure do. Mark and Jake put on some fantastic seminars about the Great Lakes and Great Lakes fishing. And we've just got, you know, there'll be over 75 seminars over the 4 days of the show covering everything from fishing to hunting to mushroom hunting, training your dog, grooming your land for wildlife and hunting. And they're all free with admission to the show. They're all part of the show, so you don't have to have any extra costs or anything like that. And you're right. We have some guys that have been around for years and years and are pretty educated about, things from the old style ways to the new style ways. And then we've got some younger guys that, are learning some new tricks and have really come out strong and given their perspective as well. So there's a little bit there for everybody.
You know, we've got world-class. This is what Michigan is so blessed with talent in the outdoors, especially in the fishing end of things. We've got world-class ice anglers here in this state, many of which, believe this or not, who ever thought that Lansing, Michigan would be a hotbed for world-class ice anglers? But we do. We've got some of the top names in the world right here in Lansing. And then you got walleye guys like our good friend Mark Martin, who's in the Freshwater Fishing Hall of Fame. Our good friend Lance Valentine with Teachin' Fishin', who is really taking the education level to a whole nother step.
Yes, absolutely. You can come away from the show with just a wealth of knowledge on just about every fish that swims in Michigan. We've got an expert, either a local expert or a national expert. And like you said, you know, we've got a lot of really, really talented people right here in Michigan that will be, you know, sharing their tips and their tactics and techniques that they use to put more fish in the boat.
Now, Lake St. Clair, as we have come to see I don't know what the stretch of time has been. We've always known that St. Clair has been a great muskie fishery, but it has really come on as a world-class smallmouth bass fishery, and we've got Captain Wayne Carpenter that's going to be there as well.
Yes, we sure do, and Wayne doesn't pull any punches. He'll tell you everything that you want to know about Lake St. Clair, how to find them, where to find them, how to catch them. Fishermen can be very secretive sometimes. And, you know, well, where'd you catch them? Oh, in the lake. Well, how deep were you fishing? Oh, I don't know, 10 to 20 feet. Right. They really limit it down sometimes for us. Wayne's not that kind of a fisherman. He'll tell you exactly what he uses, what color, what kind of line, what kind of hooks, how to present it. And very educated. He's been fishing Lake St. Clair for his entire life. And he's got a lot of real neat tricks and tactics that'll put you on fish over there.
And Kevin Backus, you mentioned muskie trolling, mm-hmm. too. Kevin is the grandson of legendary walleye or muskie fisherman Homer LeBlanc. And Kevin uses the same tactics and techniques that Homer used. And, again, he's willing to share those with anybody that comes to the show. And these guys all love to talk fishing. So a lot of times when the seminars are over, they'll stick around for another 20 minutes or half an hour just asking or answering questions that people have asked and you know, having one-on-one conversations with everybody. So it's really a neat opportunity to pick the brains of some of the best fishermen in the state and the country.
Bill Parker, editor of Michigan Outdoor News, also working with Showspan here, talking with us about Outdoorama coming up towards the end of this month into the first part of March at the 26th is when it gets underway at the Suburban Collection Showplace in Novi. One of my favorite seasons of all time has become turkey hunting, and my very first turkey, my second, my third, all of them have come to the call of Seth McCullough. We know him as Bully and his wild turkey game calls. That guy has put together some of the best turkey calls made in Ravenna, Michigan. And, you know, and that's not according to me, like an extreme novice still at the sport, but this is by Field and Stream. He's been rated number one.
Yeah, he's got some great calls. In fact, I've called in birds the last 2 years with his slate calls. And he's got slate calls and diaphragms and box calls, and he makes them all himself. He's a champion caller, calling contests and stuff. He's won several of them, and he does a lot of things with kids and takes kids out and, you know, shows them about turkey hunting. He'll be giving seminars as well at the show, as well as have his products on sale there, and people can come and check them out and see if that's the tone that they're looking for.
Now, I noticed my buddy Joel Pytek from Fishhead's Fishing Charters, rather, out of Harsin's Island. He's going to be at the seminar. We're going to be talking to him on the show. He's been out literally on the water in February catching some monster walleye.
Yeah, and again, one of those, you know, guys that really knows his stuff, and Joel's a very good speaker. He'll be giving seminars throughout the show and talking to people about all things fishing in Michigan.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. I mean, you know, it's so funny. We go down this list of people, John Eberhardt with his very unique style of hunting big whitetails, pressured whitetails. Each and every one of these people, I would say 95% of the people that are coming to the seminar have graced this show, have shared their information, and have become close friends over the years. And that just speaks volumes to their personalities as why you bring them to the Suburban Collection Showplace for Outdoorama.
Yeah, and another one that's coming back this year that hasn't been in the last year or two, but has a really good seminar and always fills the room is Teresa Maybrier, and she'll be talking about morel mushrooms. And, you know, with spring coming up, it won't be long. You mentioned turkey hunting, and a lot of people kind of put the two together and do some turkey hunting, and in the afternoon when things slow down, go out and start looking for morels. And Teresa and her husband, John, are experts on morel mushrooms and all sorts of mushrooms. And they give tips on finding them and obviously, you know, knowing the difference between the false morels and the true morels, which is probably number one issue that people need to learn right off the bat. But they're very, very wise and educated about mushrooms and where to find them and when to find them and what you're looking for as far as, you know, temperature and weather and when they pop and when they don't. And then they've got some recipes that they'll share with people as well and some very tasty ones, I might add.
All right. Bill Parker joining us right now. We're going to talk more in just a couple minutes here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
To everyone that has served this great country, keeping us free to enjoy the great outdoors, thank you. From Duran Martinez and Team Wild Michigan.
I'm just trying to be a father, raise a daughter and a son, be a lover to their mother, everything to everyone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, all over the Great Lakes State, being brought to you by Not Just Guns of Mason. Find them online, notjustguns.com, and don't forget their Wednesday night auctions. Buy it Wednesday night online, pick it up Thursday the next day, and they guarantee what they sell, man. They're great people. Check them out, notjustguns.com. The good guys in the gun business. Also, Conquest Sense. We heard from Doug Roberts earlier today talking about the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, and they've got UD. I'm not good with acronyms today. The United Deer Farmers of Michigan have an event coming up at the Soaring Eagle Casino and Resort on the 13th. This is going to be a big, big auction, which includes a helicopter hog hunt, bear hunt, turkey hunting in Michigan, alligator hunt in Louisiana. Lots of great stuff. We'll post that up on the website, wildmichiganradio.com. It'll be a big, big event to go to. I know I will be there that evening. It'll be a two-day event, but looking forward to see you there on the 13th of March. And we are now back with Bill Parker, Michigan Outdoor News, and, of course, Showspan. We're talking a little bit about what's going on coming up for Outdoor-rama starting the 26th of February. $12 to get in, and it'll be held at the Novi at the Suburban Collection Showplace right there off of 96, a great venue. It's easy to get to on and off, and lots of cool stuff around there as well. Real quickly, Bill, one of the things we didn't touch on, which happens each and every year, is Big Buck Night with our friends Jimmy and Jenny from Michigan Out of Doors, and that's not going to disappoint again this year because we've had a lot of big deer taken in Michigan again.
Yeah, we sure have, and that is always a huge draw. It's Thursday night only. The show starts, or Big Buck Night actually starts at 7 o'clock, and the doors open at 6:30, and I highly recommend getting there early, or you'll be at the back of the room. You can see those bucks a lot closer when you get up front.
Yeah,
and like you said, some beautiful bucks I'm sure will be there this year. There always are.
Yeah, it's been another great year. We've talked about this with Doug in the past about, you know, what are the makings of a good year for whitetail. And I think maybe even coming into next year, even though we've had this late winter, I mean, the tough stuff is pretty much over. But now, you know, they're having to forage a bit more. But we're going to have a shorter winter than probably we've ever had as far as snowfall is concerned in the lower portion of the state. And hopefully, you know, a good survival rate for the young of the year, so we'll be looking forward to that. One last thing also, since I've been involved my whole life, but recently as a business with buying and selling a lot of vintage items, sporting goods are part of it. Terry McBurney is going to be there. If you've got old fishing lures or fishing rods, things like that, that need identification, Terry is your guy, and he'll be at Outdoor-rama as well.
Yeah, and he will, like you said, he'll appraise any lures or tackle that you want to bring in and give you an idea of what it might be worth. And some of the stuff that Terry's got is just amazing, and a lot of it has roots right here in southeastern Michigan. It's amazing some of the fishing tackle that's come out of southeastern or southern Michigan, I should say, over the years. And Terry's got a lot of that, and he knows the story on all of it. I've had conversations with him, meant to stop for 5 minutes, and a half an hour later we're still talking and getting the lowdown on some of the cool stuff that he's got. So that's definitely a booth worth stopping at and spending a little time with Terry.
Absolutely. Now let's go to the news end of things. It's not a lot going on in February. I mean, aside from Showtime getting ready, and normally sometimes we're talking about ice fishing right now, but some places the ice is so thin that I am not going to venture out, and I'm not going to encourage anybody to venture out as well. But there are things being talked about. Bill, I want to touch on this real quickly. The cormorant issue in Michigan has been touchy
yeah,
with a lot of people.
Really, really has. We were able to manage cormorants for several years, and it just made a huge difference in our fisheries, especially in some, you know, select areas, Saginaw Bay, Lacino Islands, Ludington, and where some areas that have had some pretty severe predation problems by cormorants in the past. And when we were able to manage them, we were able to keep that, you know, that predation down to a minimum and let the fisheries thrive. What happens is they flock up in the spring, and get in nursing areas and just decimate the young fish, young of the year, and then, you know, the smaller fish that never get a chance really to recruit into the fishery. But the feds are finally starting to maybe move forward with that. And I say those all with a grain of salt, because when you're talking about the federal government, you never know how it's going to go or what's going to happen until it's actually done. But the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service right now is taking comments on a new cormorant management plan that they're hoping to move forward with, and they're accepting comments through March 9th. You can go to www.regulations.gov and just kind of follow the links there if you want to comment on it. That's certainly something that, you know, if you fish the Great Lakes especially, or even inland lakes, that you might want to make some comments on and let the feds know what we're seeing here in Michigan and what kind of problems we're experiencing. Because we really do need to have some sort of management in place that can, you know, keep them in check a little bit.
You know, Saginaw Bay, speaking of Bill Parker from Michigan Outdoor News here, Saginaw Bay has been really under the microscope with some of these House bills also about some of the commercial fishing that's going on. Commercial fishing wanted to expand. They're making the excuse that these three House bills that were just passed that are now being looked at in the Senate could wipe out their industry, which... personally, I think is a lot of crap. I'm just going to say it flat out. They want to put walleye and lake trout and things like that in their nets when there's always been already been, you know, declines in our what we're able to take in perch, but yet they're not being managed in that fishery. And it's causing a lot of issue in that part of the state, but I don't think the rest of the state is really on board with what's going on, and it's extremely important.
Yeah, anybody that fishes the Great Lakes really needs to pay attention to those bills. And the commercial fishing registration or regulations, rather, haven't been updated in like 50 years. It's been a long, long time. The fees that they pay for a license are just minuscule compared to you know, what everybody else does and how things have increased over the years. So what those House bills do also is they kind of update all the regulations and bring them up into, you know, the 2000s and make some things are made easier. For instance, a lot of the registration and when they have to report their catch and stuff like that, a lot of times that's very cumbersome and labor intensive, if you will, and a lot of paperwork, and they're streamlining that and going to a digital reporting that they can do it right from the boat, right from a computer or a laptop or probably even a cell phone. So a lot of the things that they're doing there are just kind of updating things that haven't been updated in a long time. And the other thing is, like you said, is protecting our game fish. We certainly don't want commercial netters out there taking walleye and perch and you know, the fish that we've worked so hard and spent so much money on over the years to bring those fisheries back and to get them up to the spot that they are now. And the last thing we want to do is, you know, give 20 or 30 or 40%, whatever they're asking for, to the commercial fishermen.
Yeah, I'm frankly tired of their sob story about how it's going to put them out of business. Well, you know what? Maybe you should have been, you know, practicing a little bit more, I'm going to say, ethical ways of reporting and things of that nature. And again, this is me saying it. I'm not putting the words in anybody else's mouth, and I'm definitely not going to bring specifics as to who and who's saying what where. But as far as the sport anglers are concerned, please know that I am on your side, because we are the ones putting the billions, and I mean billions, not only into local economy, but into state economy and national economy with everything we are spending. So, you know, we are putting far more than these commercial fisheries are putting in, and I'm pretty much going to leave it at that. If they want to contact me, feel free. I'm very easy to find, wildmichiganradio.com. But Bill Parker, we appreciate your help, as always, because Outdoorama coming up, a lot of things coming up here. And as always, man, we appreciate your insight here on Wild Michigan.
No, it's always a pleasure, Duran. I sure enjoy it. Thank you for helping us get the word out.
Absolutely, man. And we greatly appreciate your time. And I'm glad that you're home safe today instead of being on the road, because today, you know, the recording day here was pretty nasty. And it just kind of like, you know, is he really going to come to that meeting? Is it really that important? But and next time we talk, too, I want to talk about a possible appointment that's going on with the NRC that's really got some people up in arms.
Yeah.
And arms being, you know, the air quote thing, too. So It's I don't know where this group is going, but it's causing some issues.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but we'll catch up with that as we watch these things closer. Again, look for Michigan Outdoor News on your shelves. Also, make sure to show up to Outdoor Ram. I'm going to be down there. It gets underway on the 26th of February. Going to go into March. Big Buck Night Thursday only. And see all of it online. We'll have all the details at wildmichiganradio.com. This is Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.